In a world where algorithms determine your perfect match, where would you turn if your heart disagreed? This question lies at the core of Ali Condie's Crossed, the riveting sequel to her New York Times bestseller, Matched. Since its 2011 release, this dystopian romance has captivated millions of readers worldwide, including celebrities like Emma Watson, who praised its exploration of choice and control. The novel's examination of rebellion against algorithmic determinism feels increasingly relevant in our data-driven society, making it a cultural touchstone for young readers grappling with questions of identity in a world that increasingly tries to define them through digital metrics. As we follow Cassia's journey through the dangerous carving to find her forbidden love, we confront timeless questions about freedom, sacrifice, and the courage to defy a seemingly perfect system. The society's pristine facade crumbles at its edges, particularly in the outer provinces where Kai Markham has been sent as a disposable decoy. Here, aberrations like Kai are placed in fake villages constructed with meticulous attention to detail, complete with empty houses, maintained streets, and even artificial smoke from chimneys, all to maintain the illusion of thriving communities. These elaborate stage sets serve a sinister purpose: to draw fire from an unnamed enemy while protecting the society's real settlements. The deception runs so deep that even maps are falsified, marking these death zones as legitimate townships. The true horror of the society's callous strategy becomes evident as Kai and his companion Vic perform their grim daily routines. Under the cold gaze of society officers, they dispose of dead bodies in rushing rivers, young boys and girls who, like them, were deemed expendable. The officers cultivate fear of the rivers through calculated warnings and restrictions, but Kai's fear runs deeper, not of death itself, but of dying wrong, of perishing without meaning or remembrance in this carefully orchestrated massacre. Life as a decoy is brutal and dehumanizing in ways both large and small. The society provides barely enough water to sustain life, leading to deaths from dehydration that they methodically document as natural causes. The daily enemy attacks leave bodies scattered across the false village, some as young as 15, and the survivors must dig graves in the hard earth with inadequate tools. While other decoy villages leave their dead to decompose in the open, Kai and Vic maintain a fierce grip on their humanity by insisting on proper burials. They mark each grave with small stones, creating an unofficial memorial that defies the society's attempt to erase these lives. The society's control extends beyond life into death itself, creating a stark hierarchy even in final moments. Citizens of the central provinces receive elaborate end-of-life ceremonies, customized final meals, recorded last words, and sophisticated tissue preservation that promises potential immortality. In contrast, aberrations like Kai are denied even the most basic death rites, their bodies disposed of without ceremony or record. In quiet but determined resistance, Kai transforms this act of disposal into one of remembrance, whispering Tennyson's Crossing the Bar as a eulogy for each body committed to the river. Poetry becomes his weapon against systematic dehumanization, each verse a declaration that these lives mattered. This poignant contrast between the society's technological promises and the brutal reality of the outer provinces reveals more than just inequality. It exposes the moral bankruptcy at the heart of this supposedly perfect system. The society's willingness to sacrifice its own people, particularly those deemed imperfect, demonstrates how its pursuit of order and control has devolved into calculated genocide. 3 months have passed since Cassia was separated from Kai, and her determination to find him has only grown stronger. Working in various labor camps in Tana Province, she strategically positions herself for an eventual escape to the outer provinces where Kai was sent. Cassia's inner world has transformed. Kai's absence has become its own kind of presence. a missing so complete that if it were to go away, I would turn around, stunned, to see that the room is empty after all. Between transfers, Cassia carefully guards her treasures. Messages from her family, a deteriorating painting from the 100 paintings given by Xander, and secretly, Kai's compass and blue tablets from Xander. These physical connections to her past life sustain her through the monotony and hardship of the work camps. Each item represents a choice, the society-approved relationship with Xander versus her forbidden love for Kai, a tension that continues to define her journey. When Xander unexpectedly appears at her work camp, their reunion is bittersweet. Though genuinely caring for him, Cassia's heart remains fixed on finding Kai. In a pivotal moment, she trades Kai's precious compass to an archivist for information about the Outer Provinces, a painful sacrifice that demonstrates the depths of her commitment. The archivist's cryptic message leads her to discover the existence of the Rising, a rebellion against the society led by someone called the Pilot. This revelation plants a seed of hope that she and Kai aren't alone in their resistance. As officials arrive to transfer girls from the work camp, Cassia seizes her opportunity. With careful calculation, she hides her colored tablets, removes signs of her citizenship, and boards an airship bound for parts unknown, taking her first real step toward finding Kai and embracing a life beyond the society's control. The vast network of canyons known as the Carving becomes the central landscape of the novel, both a physical setting and a powerful metaphor. This rugged wilderness stands in stark contrast to the society's sterile, controlled environments. With its towering walls, like a fire caught burning and turned to rock, the Carving represents both extreme danger and the possibility of freedom. For Kai, the Carving holds personal significance as the area near his childhood home. He knows its secrets, the hidden water sources, the concealed paths, and the history of the farmers who once lived independently within its protection. This knowledge becomes his most valuable asset as he plans an escape from the society's death sentence. When he discovers young Eli among the new decoys, a boy who reminds him of Cassia's brother Bram, Kai makes the fateful decision to include him in his escape plan, despite Vic's warning that sentimentality will get you killed. Meanwhile, Cassia and her unexpected ally Indy navigate the same treacherous landscape from a different direction. Their journey through the Carving reveals its dual nature, breathtaking beauty alongside horrific evidence of the society's brutality. They discover dozens of bodies with mysterious blue markings, possibly members of the Rising killed by either the society or the enemy. The Carving holds other secrets too, perfectly smooth sections of canyon wall that reveal disguised society doors, and the body of a boy who died trying to claw his way through one. The Carving's natural elements become characters themselves. The precious water that must be carefully rationed, the spiky desert plants harvested for food, the narrow passages that provide both protection and potential entrapment. As both groups navigate this wilderness, they must develop new skills and awareness, learning to read the landscape for survival. The Carving strips away society comforts and pretenses, forcing each character to confront who they truly are and what they're willing to sacrifice for freedom. Against the harsh backdrop of the Carving, relationships deepen through shared hardship and vulnerability. Kai's friendship with Vic reveals the power of human connection even in desperate circumstances. Vic shares his heartbreaking story of falling in love with an anomaly named Lainey and their unofficial contract ceremony before she disappeared with her family. When society officials came for them, Vic, whose father held high rank in the army, was immediately reclassified and sent to the outer provinces. This revelation humanizes Vic and illustrates how the society's rigid classification system destroys lives regardless of previous status. The novel's most devastating loss occurs when Vic is killed by the society's bombardment while fishing in the stream. Near his body, Kai finds a rainbow trout floating dead in a newly formed pool, a poignant symbol of Vic's unfulfilled dreams. Throughout the day, Kai hallucinates Vic's voice telling stories about Lainey, a psychological manifestation of grief that helps him understand why his father welcomed the voices in his head after loss. They meant he was never alone. For Cassia and Kai, their eventual reunion in the carving becomes a bittersweet mixture of joy and painful honesty. Their relationship has evolved beyond the initial attraction in the society, now tested by separation, hardship, and the weight of difficult choices. When Kai attempts to destroy a map that could lead them to the Rising, their fundamental conflict emerges. Cassia's determination to join the rebellion versus Kai's deep distrust of both the society and revolutionary movements. This tension culminates in a painful argument where Kai declares he cannot join the Rising, creating a rift between them just when they found each other again. In one of the novel's most intimate moments, Kai and Cassia share a night together under the stars, temporarily setting aside their conflicts. Kai later captures this experience in his first ever named poem, describing how they let the world be only the two of us while it spun with colors of green, blue, and red. This brief respite of connection amidst chaos demonstrates how love persists even when the future remains uncertain. The mysterious rebellion known as the Rising emerges as a central focus of the novel, representing both hope for freedom and potential new dangers. Information about the Rising comes in fragments, a story from the archivist, Indy's mother's teachings about the pilot, and eventually pamphlets discovered in the farmer's abandoned settlement. The Rising promises an alternative to the society's control, but its true nature and intentions remain ambiguous. Indy's obsession with finding the Rising drives much of the plot's momentum. She reveals her mother once carved a boat to escape and find a rebellion on an island, but was caught by officials. This personal connection fuels Indy's determination to complete her mother's mission. When she discovers a map potentially leading to the Rising, she's willing to leave others behind, believing the society will return Cassia and Eli safely while she and Kai, whom she believes might be the pilot, reach the rebellion. The revelation that Xander is already part of the Rising adds another layer of complexity. This secret, which Kai has kept from Cassia, suggests the rebellion's influence extends deeper into the society than previously thought. The Rising has been recruiting selectively, targeting those with immunity to the red tablets, people like Kai, Xander, and Indy who cannot be controlled through the society's memory-erasing technology. Kai's resistance to joining the Rising stems from his childhood experiences. His father's involvement with the rebellion ultimately led to his parents' deaths, leaving Kai deeply skeptical of revolutionary promises. He tells Cassia, "I've seen what happens to the people who believe," revealing his fear that the Rising might simply replace one form of control with another. This tension between hope for change and fear of repeated betrayal creates the novel's central dilemma. Is freedom possible within any organized system, or does true liberty require complete independence? The farmers who once inhabited the carving represent a third path beyond both the society and the Rising. These anomalies chose to live independently when the society formed, creating hidden settlements and calling themselves farmers. Their community valued connection and freedom, evidenced by the interconnected paths between houses that suggest people freely visited one another, a stark contrast to the society's regulated social interactions. Hunter, the last remaining farmer, becomes a crucial character who bridges past and present. After losing his daughter Sarah to illness, Hunter remained in the carving while others fled or joined the Rising. His continued presence preserves the farmer's knowledge and history. The graveyard where he buried Sarah reveals a profoundly different approach to death than the society's. Each grave marked with names, dates, and poetic epitaphs that honor individual lives rather than reducing them to preserved tissue samples. The farmer's abandoned township provides physical evidence of their alternative lifestyle. Their painted walls feature boats floating on clouds and angel figures, artistic expressions forbidden in the society. Their library cave contains unedited books and papers, so different from the society's carefully pruned materials. Most significantly, they maintained their own history through written records, refusing to let the society control their narrative. The farmers' practical knowledge becomes essential for survival in the carving. They created hidden water sources, stockpiled supplies, and mapped the intricate canyon system. Their approach balanced pragmatism with humanity. They prepared for hardship while preserving beauty and meaning. Through Hunter and the farmer's legacy, the novel suggests that resistance doesn't always require organized rebellion. Sometimes it manifests as simply living according to one's own values, despite external pressure to conform. Throughout Crossed, poetry emerges as a powerful form of resistance against the society's control. In a world where creative expression is limited to approved content, the 100 paintings, the 100 songs, the 100 poems, creating or sharing unauthorized words becomes a revolutionary act. Poetry serves multiple functions: preserving memory, expressing forbidden emotions, creating connection, and maintaining humanity in dehumanizing circumstances. Kai's recitation of Tennyson's "Crossing the Bar" over dead bodies transforms a routine disposal into a dignified funeral. The poem's imagery of crossing from life to death provides meaning where the society offers none. Similarly, the epitaph on Sarah's grave, "Suddenly across the June a wind with fingers goes," honors her individual life with beauty and specificity that defies the society's anonymous processing of death. For Cassia, discovering unauthorized poetry opens new possibilities of expression. When she finds Emily Dickinson's "I Did Not Reach Thee," she connects deeply with the poet's ability to put down words and make them her own. This inspires Cassia to begin writing her own poem for Kai. "I climb into the dark for you. Are you waiting in the stars for me?" Through this creative act, she claims agency over her own narrative. The Dylan Thomas poem, "Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night," becomes a shared password between Cassia and Kai, a secret language that connects them across distance. When they finally reunite, Cassia whispers these words to Kai, confirming their bond. Poetry thus creates a private space beyond the society's surveillance, a mental territory they cannot regulate or control. Most significantly, poetry represents the persistence of human creativity despite attempts to suppress it. When Kai paints the cave walls in darkness while others sleep, he creates a visual poem of his experiences: rivers of stars, the world of rocks and trees, Vic's stream with its fish marker, his parents, and Cassia in her red dress. This act of creation, done without permission or audience, affirms that the human spirit cannot be fully contained by any system, no matter how powerful. As the novel reaches its climax, the characters face crucial decisions about their futures. The discovery of a plastic boat creates a pivotal moment. Only two people can travel quickly downriver to reach the rising, while others must take slower routes. This limitation forces Cassia to make an impossible choice, reminiscent of her earlier sorting work for the society. In a surprising turn, Cassia chooses Eli and Indy to take the boat, not herself. She explains that someone needs to get Eli safely down the river, and since Hunter is heading to the mountains, Indy is the only one with water navigation skills. This decision demonstrates Cassia's growth from self-interest to considering the welfare of others, particularly the vulnerable Eli, who reminds her of her brother. Kai's decision to follow the river on foot and join Cassia at the rising represents his ultimate sacrifice of personal conviction for love. Despite his deep distrust of the rebellion, he chooses to follow Cassia's path rather than lose her. When they share a final moment before parting, Cassia takes his dirt-covered hands in hers, feeling the grit and cuts that tell of his journey, and assures him it will all come clean. This intimate gesture acknowledges the pain of their past while offering hope for healing. The novel concludes with separated journeys toward uncertain futures. Cassia and Indy navigate dangerous rapids before reaching a lake where rising members find them. After interrogation, they receive different assignments. Indy will train as a pilot, while Cassia is sent back to Central, where she can serve the Rising from within the Society. Meanwhile, Kai arrives separately and learns he'll be trained as an airship pilot in Kamis Province. In the final scene, Cassia has established herself as a traitor with the Archivists in Central. She's received a message from someone in the Rising, presumably Kai, telling her where they can meet that night. As she descends the stairs after work, she notices frost blooming on a cement wall, resembling stars of flowers. A fleeting moment of beauty that reminds us that even in controlled environments, unexpected wonders can emerge. This image encapsulates the novel's central hope that genuine human connection and beauty will persist despite systems designed to eliminate them. A shocking discovery in the cavern reveals the true nature of the Society's tissue preservation program. Cassia, Kai, and their companions find an enormous collection of tubes containing tissue samples organized by province. These aren't just samples taken at death, as the Society claims. The dates reveal they were collected while people were still alive. This discovery suggests a far more extensive surveillance and control system than previously understood. The Society's pursuit of immortality through tissue preservation represents their ultimate form of control, the attempt to manage not just life, but death itself. By promising citizens potential resurrection through preserved tissue, they create both fear of losing this privilege and hope for eternal life within their system. This manipulation ensures compliance by linking immortality to citizenship status. Hunter's visceral reaction to this discovery, breaking tubes and triggering alarms, demonstrates the natural human revulsion to such cold, scientific reduction of human life. His rage contrasts sharply with Cassia's more measured response as she explains to Hunter that the Society takes these samples so they can potentially bring people back to life someday. This difference highlights the gap between those raised within the Society's ideology and those who maintained independence. The preservation project raises profound ethical questions about what constitutes a meaningful life and death. Is a technologically preserved existence truly immortality? Does the Society's approach honor human dignity or reduce people to biological specimens? Through this storyline, the novel challenges readers to consider whether extending life at any cost is worthwhile if it means surrendering freedom and individuality. The discovery in the cavern ultimately accelerates the characters' commitment to resistance. They realize the Society's control extends beyond their conscious lives into potential future existence, making their fight for autonomy even more urgent. By rejecting the Society's promise of controlled immortality, they choose instead to embrace the uncertain but authentic life of rebellion. Crossed ultimately explores what it means to exercise choice in a world designed to eliminate it. Each character must decide what freedom means to them and what they're willing to sacrifice to achieve it. For Cassia, freedom initially means finding Kai, but it evolves into something broader, the right to determine her own path without society algorithms dictating her future. Her journey from obedient citizen to active rebel traces a growing awareness that true freedom requires both breaking away from external control and developing the courage to make difficult choices. Kai's relationship with freedom is more complex. Having lived as an aberration, he's experienced the Society's oppression more directly than Cassia. Yet his resistance isn't about joining organized rebellion, but preserving his autonomy and protecting those he loves. When he tells Cassia, "I've seen what happens to the people who believe," he reveals his skepticism that trading one system for another can ever lead to true freedom. His ultimate choice to join the Rising, despite these reservations, demonstrates that sometimes freedom means choosing connection over ideological purity. The novel suggests that freedom exists not in perfect circumstances, but in the act of choosing itself. When Cassia refuses to take her red tablet, despite emotional pain, she exercises freedom by embracing memory with all its difficulties. Similarly, when Kai opens his hands to let raindrops mark him and then let them go, he experiences an epiphany about releasing control. I need to let go of everything. That paradoxically makes him more free. Through these intertwined journeys, Crossed offers a nuanced perspective on resistance in an unfree world. It suggests that freedom isn't a destination, but a continuous process of making choices according to one's own values rather than external dictates. The character's various paths, joining the Rising, seeking the farmers in the mountains, or working within the system as Kasia ultimately does, represent different but equally valid approaches to preserving human dignity and autonomy in the face of oppression. The courage to choose, even when choices are limited and outcomes uncertain, becomes the truest expression of freedom possible.